In an air of despondency, the Beatles returned to Liverpool in early December 1960. After a week or two, they finally got themselves going and played at the Casbah Club. But if anything was to lift their spirits at the time, it was their performance at the Litherland Town Hall, a large suburban Liverpool dance hall. That night, the Beatles exploded in front of their friends. The audience couldn't believe the improvement. These lurching, leaping, leather-clad lads drove them wild.
Thank you. Well, we'd like to sing Twist and Shout.
It was on this night that the first real signs of Beatlemania occurred. On March 21st, 1961, the Beatles make their debut at No. 8 Matthew Street, The Cavern, a warehouse opened in the 1950s as a traditional jazz spot. But now, beat groups such as the Swinging Blue Jeans, the Foremost, and Jerry and the Pacemakers shared the stage with the Beatles. Liz Hughes, one of their original Cavern fans who has started the Beatle Museum on Matthew Street, explains what those early days of the Cavern were like.
Matthew Street, back then, it was a very dark, sort of dingy little road with seven-story warehouses all the way down on either side. Very little light, natural light, got through. It was always sort of dark and dreary looking. And the Cavern door was literally a hole in the wall. It was an arched doorway, sort of painted at the top in red and white and blue. And with the Cavern was sort of scrawled up one side. It was originally done by the doorman who worked there. And the stairs sort of went to nothing at one side, so you went down sideways like a crab, you know, with your feet on these stone steps. And you got to the bottom and you were in a basement, a cellar. Stone walls, no decor to speak of at all, a very smelly, dingy little place that was always very damp. If you touched the walls, your hands came away wet, because with all the bodies down there, the sweat, the walls used to sweat. The water had run off them. The stage was built into an arch. The groups playing on the stage didn't have a terrific amount of headroom. You usually notice on old Cavern photographs that the two fellas standing nearest the wall will always have their heads bent because the arch was literally touching the top of the head, you know.
In April, after much arranging by Alan Williams, they returned to Hamburg. This time, the Beatles were ready for it. They played the Top Ten Club. It was bigger than most and not as rough. Jerry and the Pacemakers, their friends from Liverpool, were also booked into the club and all had a great time.
Cause I'm searching, oh, I'm searching, oh my goodness, searching, we're into it, yeah, yeah, but I'm like a Northwest Mountain, you know I'll bring her some.
It was on this trip to Hamburg that the so-called Beatle hairstyle was born. A lot of the young men in Europe of this period wore their hair this way, especially the art college crowd. The stories of Astrid persuading Stuart to comb his hair forward were true, but she didn't get the rest of them to do it. Paul has his own story.
We saw some guy in Hamburg whose hair we liked, John and I were hitchhiking to Paris. We asked him to cut our hair like he did his. He didn't do it quite the same as his, and it fell down in the Beatles cut. He was a great guy called Jürgen. He's a photographer friend of everyone's from Hamburg.
So with the exception of Pete Best, this famous Beatle trademark was born. And when the Beatles became big in North America, it was all attributed to them. On this second trip, they made their first real recording. This time, they were to do the musical backing for Tony Sheridan. The late Bert Kempfert, the German orchestra leader and composer of many big international hits, produced the recording. The Beatles were called the Beat Boys because the Polydor record people thought that Beatles was too confusing and that Beat Boys was always the name of Tony's backup band. Stewart was now painting and drawing more than ever before. So at this point, Stuart Sutcliffe left the Beatles. It was the best thing for him. He loved the Beatles, but he was no musician, and he knew it. So Paul took over the duties of playing bass, something he really didn't want to do.
So there was a kind of changeover, and he like handed over to me, and he lent me his bass, and I had to play that upside down, because he didn't want the strings turned over and messed around too much. You know, I managed that. And then eventually I got my own bass, and I was kind of in on bass. So I was always like a frustrated guitarist playing bass.
Though they supposedly recorded 5 of their own numbers, only one was issued. Cry for a Shadow. It was sarcastically called this because of their disdain for the very popular Shadows, the backing group of Cliff Richard, who put out piles of instrumental hits in Britain. Written by George and John, it featured George on lead guitar and John on rhythm.